and thank you for joining us here on a Friday, which is an unusual day for us to convene here in the Soul with Soul virtual studio, but here we are, and I'm glad you're here with us. Today's show is about real estate consulting, obviously. As the relatively newly appointed commander-in-chief of the ACRE program, the Accredited Consultant in Real Estate program, well, actually, I guess it's been over a year now. But anyway, part of my commitment to the ACRE program, and more specifically to the ACRE membership, is that I will hold reasonably regular teleseminars on subjects of interest to consulting-minded people, either those who are already members of ACRE or those who are considering becoming part of our crowd. Now, I believe we have both factions in the audience today. We have ACRES and non-ACRES. So hopefully the information we share today will be specific enough for those who already know what it's all about, yet general enough for those who don't. Now, be assured that today's show is in no way an infomercial for the ACRE program. I mean, if it turns out that it's something you'd like to do, I'm certainly happy to help you with that, but that's not why we're here today. At the end of the program, we'll probably talk a little bit about ACRE. At least 90% of our time today together will be pure, unadulterated information. I have Ron Stewart here in the virtual studio with me, and you'll probably be hearing his voice much more than mine today. Ron is one of the original ACRES, I believe. Is that right? You were?
Yes, he is.
Pretty early on, yep.
Okay. I'll let him explain a little bit further, but he has a real estate consulting practice that is, one, rather successful, and two, and correct me if I'm wrong here, nearly completely non-commission compensation based. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Ron is in Canada, Nova Scotia to be exact. But again, I'll let him tell you more about Ron here in a few minutes. But for now, welcome. Thanks for being here. We also have Molly in the studio with us today. She's just here to help us out. So all of you probably know who Molly is. But if you don't, Molly Wasserman is the founder of the ACRE program. And that's who, you know, she handed it over to me a little over a year ago. So Molly knows more about real estate consulting and the program probably than I do. So she's here to back me up if I run into any trouble. So thank you, Molly. I'm glad you're here.
No problem.
So in the year that I've been in charge here at ACRE, I've heard from a lot of agents who have expressed an interest in adding a consulting component to their real estate business, but they just haven't been able to pull the trigger to do it. So, you know, why? Okay. Why haven't they been able to? Well, that's why we're here today. the why of consulting, to be specific. And so what do I mean by that? Well, the agents who say, gee, that really sounds interesting, but yada, 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 you know, they all have their reasons as to why they haven't, as I say, pulled the trigger on adding a real estate component to their career. You know, for example, my broker won't let me, or my state limits my ability to consult, or it'll never work in my market, or I like working on commission, or I don't know how to market myself as a consultant. But here's the thing. If you really wanted to add consulting to your business, you'd figure these things out. If you're a Dave Ramsey fan, like I am, you know that he often talks about the why of getting out of debt as a way to persuade a reluctant spouse to get on board with his program. In other words, instead of beating the reluctant spouse over the head with the what's and the how's and the, you know, what we need to be doing in order to become and live debt-free, you remind the spouse of the why. Why living a debt-free life is something cool to do. So that's what my goal is for today, to talk about the why of real estate consulting, why it makes so much sense, why it's good for the consumer, and, yes, why it's good for you and your business. As I like to say, you know, let's talk about the why you might be willing to upset the apple cart of your real estate business to add in something that very few people have done before. But let me emphasize what I just said, adding something to your business, and by that I mean consulting. Now, some practicing real estate consultants do actually pretty much replace their traditional real estate business with a primarily consulting approach. We'll talk about that a little bit here in a little bit. But what most people who have incorporated consulting into their business is they simply supplement their current business model with consulting options. So they still list and sell property for a contingent commission, but they also create additional services and compensation options that create additional streams and sources of income or revenue. Okay? All right, so that's enough for me. Let's go ahead and get Ron on and talk to him and get his perspective. So, Ron, officially, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I think you guys are going to get you're going to really learn a lot from Ron. He's been on some shows with us in the past, and the way he presents things, it just makes so much sense. And anyway, I love that. Okay, so a few minutes ago, I mentioned there are three whys that we're going to cover today. The first is the why consulting makes sense. The second was why it's good for the consumer. And third, why it's good for you and your business. So that's roughly the outline we're going to take, is first talk about, okay, why does it make sense? And then we'll hit the other two. So let's start there. But before we get to that exactly, Ron, if you could define consulting as to what it means to you. Okay, and how it differs, in your view, from the traditional model of, quote-unquote, selling real estate.
Okay. Well, consulting first entered my world the better part of 10 years ago. And I should say at first, I practice in Halifax, in Nova Scotia, which is a metropolitan area of a small city or two and a town or two, and we serve a population of about 400,000 people. So it's not a huge metropolis by any means. And we had the usual assortment of brokerages and franchises and all the stuff that goes on. But about 10 years ago, we got a jolt because Assist to Sell came to town. And that resulted in a lot of hand-wringing in the real estate community and head-scratching and a lot of squabbling. People just thought this was outrageous. I took the approach that there will always be change in our businesses and better to roll with it. The end of the world had not come, but find a way to compete. And that got me thinking about ways in which I could be different. I wanted, above all, to differentiate myself from the pack. I was aware that there was a fledgling movement, principally in the U.S., about consulting. I had been aware of some of Molly's material as she was developing this. And I chased some of these people down to see what I could learn from them, and it just struck me as an ideal way to go. And I must say, at the beginning, before I really got my head around consulting, it was more about a different way of charging.
Mm-hmm.
And regrettably, some people never get beyond that. It is a different way of charging, but there's so much more there and so much value in it. And so Jennifer had a caption here, define what consulting means to you, how it differs from a traditional real estate business sales model. I think first and foremost, consulting for me became a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten away from thinking as a salesperson. I don't see people as targets anymore. I use a different vocabulary. I don't talk about, oh, I sold that listing. I helped somebody buy it. There's a big difference between selling someone and helping them buy wisely. When I talk about my business, I speak of it as my practice, because other professionals speak of it as a practice. I'm trying to get in a different space from salespeople. You know, commission associates with salespeople. Fees are more associated with professionals, doctors, attorneys, engineers, accountants, and whatnot. So there's the mindset thing. And then consulting is about advice and services, much more so than about persuasive selling. Like, I was with someone yesterday, and it was to discuss a listing engagement. And, you know, he said, the big thing is, I want you to sell my house. And I had to explain to him that it is highly unlikely that I would personally sell his house. We will get it sold because I will be able to provide you the services and the advice and guidance and coaching to take you through all the steps of bringing a buyer to your house. And so you have a different way of talking with people. Professionals advise and serve in the client's best interest. salespeople, by definition, sell. We always talk, even though in the sales framework, real estate agents talking about advising their client. Well, think about all the times you've given advice to your client, and there's that little nagging thing sitting on your shoulder telling you that be careful what you say here because this deal could fall through. We don't
right.
want it to fall
your
through.
Your advice could cost you your payday.
Well, here's the bottom line. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the bottom line on that. Advice that is in the client's best interest and advice that would secure a commission check is not always the same advice.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
What's that quote you came up with that was so, or you didn't come up with it, but you found it in an article that was so brilliant? Do you have it? I have it here.
Which one was that?
If you need a deal to happen in order to get paid, then you by definition undermine the very thing you try to do, which is to tell someone what the right course of action is.
Yeah, that's pure
consulting.
That's
the backbone of our industry. What you advise people to do if they follow your advice, you may or may not get paid depending on their decision and you're
that's
advising
right.
them. Anyway.
Yeah. And the thing about giving advice within the sales model is that sometimes economic necessity can have the effect of trumping ethics. And I don't point the finger at individuals. I think more of the structure of our industry and structural conflict, which I think we're going to talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
But that gives you a bit of my framework and approach to consulting, if that's helpful.
No, that's perfect. Some of you know I'm working on my fourth book, and there's going to be quite a bit of content in there about professionalism. And so, you know, one of the things I say very early in the book is that, you know, if you catch the word selling or sales in this book, in the context of a real estate agent sells real estate, you know, call me and I'll yell at my editor because I'm no longer going to refer to real estate as a sales career, which I haven't in a while. And I've been calling it practicing, and it just feels more professional, and it feels more like what I would want to do, which obviously we will talk more about that. There's if you hear a little yappy thing in the background, I live near a huge Air Force base where they do a lot of bombing practice and training. And so about this time of day, my house starts shaking. And so my dogs get a little upset by that. So that's what's going on in the background.
Their aiming device is good.
Yes, they're far enough away that, you know, that we're not in a whole lot of danger, but it still does affect the whole area. You have a tagline that you use on some of your emails. And
yeah, I do.
Tell me what that is.
Well, I have this, it could be called a tagline. Some people call it an elevator speech. Others call it a unique value proposition. I incorporate it into the signature block on my emails, and I also print it on the back of my business cards. And in appropriate circumstances, if I'm handing someone my business card, I hand it to them back first. So they'll see this. Here's what it says. My clients enjoy better outcomes and financial advantage by engaging me as a fee-paid advisor rather than working with a commission salesperson. Activity-based service fees usually cost less than commission and better accommodate full disclosure, transparency, and harmonized interests.
Lovely. Do people get that when they read it the first time? Do they understand what you're saying? Does it intrigue them?
No, I don't think they understand it fully, but sometimes it provokes conversation, and I hope that they might read it and ruminate on it later.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you know, the inherent conflict of interest in the way that our real estate business or the way that our industry is set up, the traditional model, it just is, it's so blatant. And as I think the article you wrote, you know, the elephants in the room or the beware of the elephants, it's just so, and how can you even argue that to say that we are contractually obligated to look after the fiduciary, you know, the best interests of our clients, but we are only compensated if they take a certain course of action, to say that that's not a conflict of interest. You know, when people set up compensation plans, when corporations set up compensation plans, they bring in these experts to, you know, set up, you know, to compensate people to motivate them to do what they want them to do, you know, to fulfill the goals. And it seems as if our industry is just the opposite. Like someone came in and said, let's really test these people and see if they can do what we're contractually and ethically obligating them to do, but we're going to pay them, you know, in a completely different manner.
Yep.
So,
well, a lot of that has to do with the momentum of our industry. Certainly when this industry was in its infancy in North America, it's a little bit over 100 years ago now, and it began as a selling thing. It was unregulated. There wasn't much cooperation. It grew and grew after the first guy brought a buyer to the farmer that wanted to sell his field, and it happened, and he said, well, then you owe me. That was the beginnings of real estate brokerage. As it went on, and we got into cooperation and brokerage and regulation and all this stuff, it was like a snowball. It took on such a strong sales culture. And the public came to understand it that way. And to this day, commission is synonymous with real estate. Selling is synonymous with real estate. And the real estate industry and its marketing and the way it presents itself to the public reinforces all that. I think it's a little much to expect that people get it, quote unquote, right away. They have to think about it a bit.
Well, there are reasons that the commission model is appealing to people, and as we've talked about in other shows, it's a lot of it is the risk mitigation in that when somebody is paying by commission, they're not paying until and unless they get the outcome that they want. And that's, that's part of the consulting model is offering that option to people,
mm-hmm.
and as long as they understand that it's going to cost them more, and here's why. Anyway, Molly, did you have something you
wanted to? Yeah, I just wanted to kind of chime in and kind of underline what Ron said. If you look at the history of real estate, and I really, studied it when I was putting together Acre at the beginning, it's that it was not really, it was, kind of the frog in the water parable of if we had started real estate saying from the beginning, well, we're supposed to represent our clients and work in their best fiduciary interest, and that was the mantra from the beginning, I don't think it would have evolved the way it did.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened is that we had the frog in the water, and we were just slowly turning up the heat, in other words, changing the environment.
Mm-hmm.
But we never had a point where certainly NAR should have, said, okay, if we're changing, that it's not enough to simply move the property, that we are not charged with simply moving the property. As they said when agency started hitting preeminence, is that if we are going to now act in fiduciary ways, we ought to really look at our compensation and the conflicts of interest that it presents. And it never happened. And again, I use the frog in the water because it was a very slow environmental change. It had been, the old environment had been so rooted.
Okay.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Molly. And, the pivotal point in that was in the early 90s when buyer agency mm-hmm. came in. And that's where we should have thought about having a mandate to stop selling and start representing. We missed the turn in the road. And what we did as an industry is we undertook to fit the newly acquired agency responsibilities to our entrenched sales culture. Of course, with its accompanying remuneration system, sale contingent commission. And we bent and twisted because the momentum of the sales culture overwhelmed everything. And so now we're left with a very real living, breathing dichotomy because we're sworn to act only in the best interests of our clients, but we're remunerated by a system that rewards acting in self-interest. Duh.
Yeah. Ron, describe your practice. What do you do all day, every day? I mean, I know you can't answer that specifically, but, what does your consulting practice look like that would differentiate it from the traditional model?
Well, I work with both buyers and sellers, and I'm gradually getting some traction working with people that are neither buyers or sellers. When I'm sitting down with a prospective seller of property, I explain to them that I have a system or a program that I call Choices because they have some choices they may not be aware of. and I trot out a little PowerPoint presentation that I have on my laptop and take them through that, where I explain how consulting works. I won't belabor that now. When I'm working with a buyer, I tell them that they too have choices. They can go out on their own and call listing agents and have people trying to sell them stuff. Or if they want to engage me as a consultant, I will take a mandate that says, I am here to help you buy and buy wisely and buy at the best price you can and really look after you. I'm not out to sell you anything. I'm here to help you buy. And I also explain the financial implications of that, which are to their advantage. And we talk about disclosure of things that you might not otherwise know about, and transparency and all this. So I work with both buyers and sellers, but I give them the consulting option right up front, and most of them take it.
So when you say the consulting option, what does that mean?
Well, it's different from the general thrust of the industry. I explain to them that, you know, if they really want to deal with someone under the old model, I can do that, and I will if they insist, but it really isn't likely the best thing for them. And when I explain it, they get it. And one thing I found in this is that consumers get it if it's well articulated.
Mm-hmm.
Realtors and brokers have a hard time getting it, no matter how well it's articulated.
Yeah, that's true. My husband, every time I talk about it, he gets it just like,
yep,
you know, the big duh. But you're right. Real estate agents have a lot harder time.
Because they've got the sales culture and they've come in. Remember, a lot of people come into this industry for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Our recruiting advertisements mislead them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we essentially say, have you got a car and a decent personality and a necktie? If so, big money awaits.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of
the... I talk about that in the book I'm working on, is that we've actually attracted the wrong person, in my opinion, to this industry as far as people who are going to be exceptional managers of a real estate transaction. We've attracted people who are very good networkers and prospectors, but that's not necessarily the person who can professionally and expertly manage a complicated transaction. But that's for a different day.
Well, we recruit them to a sales job is what we do. And then we might expect them to operate as fiduciaries. That's hard to do. Most of my business is consulting-based, probably 90% of it.
Now, let me interrupt you on that. When you say consulting-based, now we're talking more about compensation. I'm assuming that you take a consultative approach with every client you have. It's not like, okay, well, you're going to pay me by commission. I'm going to become a salesperson.
Right.
So you have the same philosophy and approach. It's just the compensation we're talking about right now.
Yes. Most, I could say probably 90% of my business the last couple of years, I have been paid on a fee-for-service basis.
Okay. Okay.
What everyone, and particularly our audience today, needs to understand, and I'm going to touch on something here because it's a misunderstanding in my own brokerage. In the house, people refer to it as fee-for-service.
Mm-hmm.
They don't refer to it as consulting.
Mm-hmm.
And they see it, I believe, as just a different way of charging.
Mm-hmm.
And some people only trot it out if they're in competitive jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to emphasize to our audience today, consulting is much more than a different way of charging.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we've done shows, you know, getting more into that. The definition at ACRE of consulting is a two-pronged definition. One, that you use a consultative approach with your clients as opposed to a sales approach.
Yes.
And the second is that you offer alternatives and services that can be received and how you pay for them.
That's right.
And so and it's both of those. It's the services you can receive and how you pay for them. I mean, it's not just, gee, you can pay in a different manner. But in any event, we've talked about that in other shows, and I'm not going to belabor that now because we have other things to talk about.
Yep.
So let's move on to the why consulting, why this, what we're talking about today, why it makes sense for the consumer. The reason I think this is so important, at least to me, is that I personally am a terrible, quote-unquote, salesperson. But I believe with all my heart that I can sell anything I believe is good for my customer. So if I believe with all my heart that something is going to benefit my customer, client, whatever, then I have no problem, and I don't know what word to use. I don't want to say pitching. I don't want to say persuading. But I have no problem advising them to do it, and they'll do it. An example I always use is I am fanatical about home staging. I think it works. And so I can, when I was selling real estate, when I was practicing real estate, almost all of my sellers hired my home stager. And I didn't pay for it. My sellers paid for it. But I believed that it would benefit them, and so it was a very easy message for me to convince them of because I believed it. So what I wanted to, so this is why I want to touch on this today is, you know, why is consulting good for the consumer? Once you grasp that and you realize, wow, this is a good deal for them, then it becomes much easier to come up with, as I said, the hows, the whens, the, you know, the wheres and the whats. So why, how is consulting good for the consumer? Ron.
Why does it make sense? See?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
It makes sense probably not until they understand that there is a structural conflict of interest facing them as they engage with the real estate industry. And I want to be distinct here and separate the conflict of interest from the people. I'm not pointing my finger at anybody or at all realtors in general. There is a structural conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And here's, let me say it in as few words as I can and as directly as I can. Real estate agents have a common law duty to place their clients' interests above all others, including their own. The real estate industry sales culture and commission compensation system motivates agents to put their own interests first,
mm-hmm.
and consumers risk mm-hmm. getting caught in the crossfire. There's a lot of things we could pick apart and discuss in that, but that's the essence of it.
Mm-hmm. I remember I had I don't know why I've been thinking about this, but probably 10 years ago, I had a client who we had his house on the market for maybe $330. I don't know. We got an offer for $315. It was a reasonably good offer, but we probably could have gotten more. And the words I said to him, I just haven't forgotten 10 years later, were, if you sign this now, we're under contract. If we counter, he might go away. Now, is that true? Yeah, that's true. But you know why I said it? I wanted that thing under contract, and I'll admit that. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a relatively ethical person, you know. So, I said those words to a client. And he signed it, and we went forward, and I don't know if he was happy or not. I guess so, you know, but
mm-hmm.
I was incented. I was motivated by my compensation structure to give him advice that may or may not have been in his best interest, and
yep.
that's probably exactly what I did. It's very real.
What,
it's not something everybody else does. We all do
yep.
it,
yep.
I think.
And it's a struggle. I mean, we in this industry place ourselves, and as brokers place agents, in a very difficult position. Because there's economic necessity to earn a living and feed your family on the one hand, and your fiduciary duties on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they crisscross.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I meant earlier when I said economic necessity can trump ethics.
Well, so let's get, you know, back to specifics on how does this benefit the consumer. You know, what if an agent says, okay, yeah, I know that, but I don't do it. I realize that I'm incentivized to look out for my best interest, but I don't. I look out for my clients. And, I've said that too. How do you convince, I guess, or assure or your clients that, you know, if we're working under this model, I mean, I am more likely to be looking out. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, how do you give them that message to where they're saying, okay, I get how this benefits me to pay you non-contingently?
Yeah. Well, I probably will talk to them a bit about some of the inconsistencies in the commission compensation structure to get them thinking. If I'm talking to someone about listing their house, I might say, have you ever thought about this, that sellers of more expensive properties pay a whole lot more than sellers of less expensive properties for essentially the same services.
Mm-hmm.
Does that seem fair to you? Worse than just the obvious inconsistency, so, and some of this is in the context of working with a buyer, worse than commission being based on just the price of the product is the fact that commission is sale contingent.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's sale contingent, it can be a motivator of behavior
mm-hmm.
on the part of the agent. Now, you raised the thing a minute ago about agents who say, well, I do all these good things anyway. I really do work for my client. I know that. And I'm eternally thankful that the office in which I work is strongly oriented that way, even if they're working on commission, a lot of them. They really would not jam somebody up.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm trying to achieve a distinctiveness in the marketplace and differentiate myself mm-hmm. from the pack, I can dramatize it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And let me give you an example. In the context of working with a buyer, consider this. Under the traditional system, it is certainly in a salesperson's best interest that a buyer buy a more expensive property, is it not?
Right.
It means a bigger payday. That's pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
It's also in a commission salesperson's best interest to favor his or at least his office's listings. It's in her best interest to show properties that have a quote-unquote safe commission, i.e. they're listed within an MLS system, and a co-broke is offered, and there are rules and regulations to ensure that it gets paid. That's what I mean by a safe commission,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to working with a FSBO, for example. Some properties offer a higher co-broke than others, so it's in the salesperson's interest to show properties that have higher commissions.
Mm-hmm.
It's in her interest to show properties that might include a bonus, a sales bonus of some kind. It's also in his best interest to avoid things like FSBOs and what we in Canada now call a mere posting. I don't know what you call them in the U.S., but
minimum service.
Minimum service, you know,
MLS
list
only.
Your house in
yeah,
the MLS for $400.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we're obligated to show those.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we're not going to get paid for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it is in a commission salesperson's interest to forget to drive down that street.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the salesperson's interest that the buyer would buy sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
And that he would buy after seeing fewer, not more, properties.
Mm-hmm.
And on and on. You know, I
mm-hmm.
there are other things here, and I don't want to belabor that. But there are just too many things that are strongly in the salesperson's interest, and given that, the salesperson then has to overcome
mm-hmm.
that to really provide fiduciary duty. And so explaining that to them, then I can say, now, here's how it works in the consulting basis. Because you can't look at that list I just went through and say that those things are in the buyer's best interest.
Hmm.
And yet, we are sworn, are we not, to uphold the buyer's best interest?
Hmm. That's interesting.
That was terrible preachy. Yeah. Forgive me.
No, I loved it. I wish I'd been taking notes on that. I'm glad I have the recording. I can go back and write some notes down. But it segues into the third why, which we're not there yet. But let's back on the second why is how it benefits the consumer. Let's talk dollars and cents. Okay? Tell me, how does what you offer, what we preach around here, how does that benefit the consumer from a purely financial perspective?
Well, first of all, working in an MLS context, which is where most of my work is done, there is a co-broke offered, as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
But from the consumer's point of view, it's embedded in the price of the property.
Mm-hmm.
It's not flagged on the listing. If it's there at all, it's in a kind of a coded thing that they wouldn't understand or wouldn't catch their interest. And consumers have a vague understanding, reinforced by the real estate industry, that if you're a buyer, our services are free.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to pay us.
Mm-hmm.
And we have told people that we, I mean our industry, has told people that over the years, so much so that they don't realize that they're paying. So, in the purchase price of the house, there is a component, that pays the buyer's agent, and it's rough. It varies, of course, but let's say typical is about 2.5%. So if that's what I'm going to be paid, it may far exceed the value of the services I provide. Mm-hmm. But given the old commission formula, you make the big kills wherever you can, mm-hmm. because you're going to have some buyers that skip out on you too. Mm-hmm. And so when you do bring a deal to fruition and you get paid, that doesn't just pay you for that file, that client. Mm-hmm. It pays for that client, and it pays a portion towards the ones that skipped away or couldn't get their money or whatever. So when you start explaining some of that to the buyer about the dollars and cents, and you can show them that my proposition to them is, look, if you will be willing to pay me for my time and services on an hourly basis, I will give you whatever commission is being paid out of that transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never yet had a client where the value of my services exceeded that.
Hmm. So they've never paid you more by the hour than the commission,
right.
quote unquote, rebate
That's
that
right.
you give them. Okay.
Yep.
You know what you just
Jennifer?
Said?
Yeah. Oh, I just wanted to add in, if it helps, and, you know, it's very similar to the airline industry or even hospitals. Hospitals can make ends meet because they charge the insured enough, or they charge the insurance companies enough to make up for the people that show up at the emergency room with no insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Airlines make a killing on their first class and people who make reservations at the last minute and ridiculous fares, which are way above the costs of their seat on the airline. But it has to make up for all of the cheapy tickets they give out so their planes are full.
Mm-hmm.
Just when people understand that there is a subsidized nature mm-hmm. of real estate, that you are, in fact, when you are paying on a $600,000-$700,000 home a commission, you are in fact subsidizing the work of the agent on the buyers that don't buy and the homes that don't sell. Very few clients that I ever talk to ever, no offense to the greater good of humanity, they just didn't want to subsidize somebody
right,
else's
right,
transactions.
Right.
They wanted to pay fairly for what the services they received
mm-hmm.
were worth. And
yeah.
explaining to them, well, from my vantage point as an agent, I have to make a killing on these other deals to make up for all the other deals that didn't
mm-hmm.
go together. Too bad, Molly. Not my problem.
So, you know, something Ron said that I think, I hope I explained this right, and it, to me, explains the beauty of the offering the options. Okay, as opposed to just saying, well, no, this is how we're going to do it. But so let's say, you know, in the buyer's mind, and I want to talk about, you know, how we save money for sellers too, but let's say in the buyer's mind, the buyer agent services are free. Okay, every other agent on the block will do this for me for free. Why are you charging me? Okay, well, let's say that you're working with a buyer who, you know, doesn't have, I mean, all they have is their down payment and closing cost money. That's all they have. And so you say, well, you know, here are your options. I can work with you on, you know, a contingent commission model, and that's fine. I'm happy to do that, and I'm going to make this much money. Or we can do, you know, you pay me a fair wage or a fair hourly rate, and I will rebate the commission. And the buyer says, well, you know, but I don't have that fair hourly rate. I don't have that money to pay you. And you say, you know, I understand. That's fine. Then we'll do it on commission. But you're offering choices that are understandable to the client. And so you say, you can save a lot of money doing it this way. Okay? You can. But if that model doesn't work for you, that's okay. We'll do it the traditional way. But then they're making a choice between the two options. Either they can invest now to save later, or, gee, I don't have anything to invest now, I'll just go for the higher cost.
If you want to buy a room full of new furniture and you don't have the cash, you can still buy it. You just buy
mm-hmm.
it on a credit card or on their mm-hmm. payment plan, but you're going to pay a lot more for the furniture.
if you have the money, or if you can get something decent on Craigslist and you can go out and get that. But you know, I think it's, and this is what I like so much about what we teach here about consulting is, it's not jamming one or the other down someone's throat and saying, no, you will pay me a retainer fee. You will pay me, by the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may be your business model, and that's perfectly fine. But when you can, say you can do one or the other, and this one will save you money, this one will, you'll take on less risk. Now, the other nice thing about working, I would think, working with buyers on a fee for service is, a buyer who's not serious ain't gonna do that. So now let's so sellers then, what's in it for a seller to pay or to take advantage of the packages and the program that you offer?
From a financial standpoint? Probably the thing that appeals to them most is the financial saving that's usually there. It just makes so much sense. In my presentation to sellers, I give them a couple of analogies that some people usually at least smile, some of them outright snicker. But suppose you took your business receipts and your income and everything to an accountant to have your income tax prepared. And you've been taking it to her for a number of years. And so you walk in, whether it's in a shoebox or on a disc, whatever, same thing. And she says, hi, nice to see you again. Happy to see that you've brought in your income tax work, and I'll be glad to do it for you. However, we're doing things differently now. I've changed my model here at XYZ Accounting. Instead of charging you for two and a half, 3 hours of my time, I thought what I would do now is my fee for preparing your tax is going to be a percentage of your last year's gross income.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I get all kinds of reactions. And when I was preparing that presentation, I took a lawyer friend of mine out for lunch because I wanted her to vet the presentation. Mm-hmm. And when I got to that, she said, hey, there's one from my profession, too. I'm like, oh, what's this going to be? She said, what if I said to my client, yes, I'm happy to prepare your will so things will be orderly when you die, and my fee will be a percentage of what we estimate your estate's going to be worth? Nonsense. You'd scratch your head and say, I'm going to find another lawyer, another accountant. But those two silly analogies are very much parallel to the terms of business that our industry has been offering customers for decades. And we still do it with a straight face.
So how do you structure your seller compensation then? How do they typically pay you? And what sort of cost savings do they see?
Well, I tell them that if they want, they can pay me by the hour, but there has to be a retainer paid up front. They can pay me for a service bundle, which is what most people choose. Or if they really want to do it on a commission basis, we'll do that too. And on the listing side, see, I almost said selling. Old habits die hard. On the listing side, they almost invariably choose the bundle. And the bundle is the services that are highly effective and virtually essential to the selling side of a transaction. And I tell people that instead of all the hoopla and hype that's in the marketplace, there's really just a handful of things you need to get your property sold at market value. First, you may need some guidance about how to prepare it. Secondly, you need price counseling and a reliable, properly documented, objective CMA. And then you need exposure to the market. And we have the tools for that, and the best tool on the planet is the MLS. And I tell her that I'm syndicated to a few other websites and whatnot, my own website. And with the property prepared and priced as it should be and exposed to the market, the next thing is response, and I'm going to take all those calls and arrange the appointments or show the house myself or whatever. I'll deal with all that, and that's going to lead ultimately to someone wanting to buy it. So when they get an offer, I'm going to be right there at your side, and we'll discuss how is best to respond with your interests in mind, counter offer or acceptance or tell them to get lost or whatever. And oh, just let me rewind a little bit. Of course, it's an MLS listing, so it's signage and lockbox and high-quality photographs and all that stuff. When we get an offer, then we've got all this due diligence stuff to go through, various inspections and financing and maybe a disclosure statement and stuff. I will watch over all that stuff for you and make sure it gets done on a timely basis. And if anything arises, we'll work out how you want to deal with it. In other words, I'll troubleshoot it, as Molly used to say, right through to closing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm offering them a package of services that is very much itemized
mm-hmm.
in exchange for a bundled fee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's kind of important here is I get a portion of the money for that when they sign the listing, and I get the balance of my fee when we have an unconditional agreement in place.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Some people ask me why. I say, well, because I've done everything I agreed to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you pay me then. But the real reason I do that, I don't want there to be any confusion about this being contingent on a closing
right.
happening.
Right.
So that's why I want to get the money then.
Okay. So you get some up front and then the remainder yep. of it once you're firmly under contract or once you have
yes.
loan approval or is...
When all the conditions of the contract are fulfilled. So the loan is approved.
Okay.
There are no objections under the inspection. If it's a rural property, the water
takes... prior to closing, but close to closing.
Well, they might not close for another month after that.
Okay.
Yeah,
but
and our Jennifer, our
not
closing...
Not when you go under contract, not when you have an executed contract. That's not what you're saying.
Well,
an executed purchase contract.
It's semantics.
Mm-hmm.
To us, it's and we do it a little differently in Canada
oh,
than
okay.
most American jurisdictions. But an accepted offer is not when I get it, because an accepted offer is subject to what lawyers call conditions precedent, and those conditions typically are financing, inspection, maybe
oh.
water tests and other tests.
Well, interesting. Okay.
And when those things are completed,
mm-hmm.
then the status of this agreement moves to firm from conditional.
I didn't know that.
And so a firm agreement is what its name implies. It's binding.
Mm-hmm.
It's bulletproof unless, you know, if someone gets run over by a bus or some tragedy happens, if there was a fire or something, then obviously the property is not going to close.
Okay, that is different. I never knew that. That is different from here, and so I wanted to make sure that we clarified that.
We close quite a different way from what you do in most U.S. jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like it. Okay, so and I guess it's kind of hard to say because now do your service package fees relate at all to the price of the home?
They do a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I found I wasn't charging enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had done a pretty detailed analysis of every step of work that went into this from my side.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a time allowance on each one of those, and I applied either my hourly rate or my assistant's hourly rate to them, depending if it was clerical or fiduciary,
mm-hmm.
and all this stuff, and it came up with a price that it was really too good. I think I might have been leaving some money on the table. What I do now, and I have a little spreadsheet by which I will play with the price before I go to see the client, but the value of their house comes into it a bit. It's not the sole determinant,
mm-hmm.
but I will charge a bit more for a big house than I do for a small house, but I can still defend that
mm-hmm.
because some of the costs in my overhead are based on commission dollars, even though I may not be working on commission. That's an objection I can easily deal with.
Well, and I think I remember you talking about this before, that it's still less money than what they
yeah.
would pay on a commission.
That's
and
right.
And so it does factor in to some degree.
Yeah. I can do it so that it's enough less
mm-hmm.
than the average co-broke to be both attractive to them and attractive and sufficient for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the third why, since we're almost at the top of the hour, and I think we've alluded to a lot of this, but let's go ahead and attack it specifically. Is all right, this all sounds good. It's, you know, it makes sense. It's good for the consumer. how specifically is it good for you and your business? How does consulting, having a consulting model, benefit you?
Okay.
There's a lot of places we can go with that, but I'll let you go ahead and start, and we'll see where it takes us.
Well, delighted to get into that. We were having a meeting in the office a week or so ago on another matter, and these conversations go all over the place, of course. And we noted that while the most common commission in our market, and I don't want to say anything here that applies setting rates or anything, they're not regulated and they're open for negotiation and they are competitive. However, the fact of the matter is, the most common commission around town seems to be 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And someone remarked that, you know, probably 10 years or so ago, you could get 6% most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's become 5% over that 10-year period. But lately, we're seeing a real increase in 4% commissions.
Hmm.
Now, I'm judging all that from the co-brokerage that's offered.
Mm-hmm.
2.5%. You think it's a 5% commission. If you're offered 2%, you think it's a 4% commission. People have been discounting from the 5% for a long time. And now when you see 2%, you know they're discounting more. The fact is that over a relatively short period of time, perhaps as much as 10 years, commissions are eroding. And if you want to say it was commonly 6% 10 years ago, and now it's getting down more likely to 4%. Unless my calculator is lying to me, that's a 20% erosion, a third. That's an erosion of a third.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 points. And there's every indication that that's going to continue. Therefore, it seems sensible to me to develop another business model that might be better.
Hmm.
And when I said earlier that realtors have a hard time getting this and consumers lap it up, realtors, even guys in my own firm, have said to me, for years around, you're crazy. You're leaving money on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you want to work for nothing? But I have to remind them, what about you when a listing expires and you paid for advertising and gas money and showing it and you beat your brains out and incurred a lot of costs for maybe 3 or even 6 months? When it expires, Mr. and Ms. Consumer think, well, he couldn't sell it. I'm going to list it with Susie down the street, and you've got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. We have to look at how much we're getting paid, what are the trends in the traditional system, and is there a better way to do things? I think consulting is valid for that effect. You will also find that if you list someone's property and you have a retainer of maybe $1,000 or $1,500 of their money plus tax paid, and if it hasn't sold in 3 months, they're a lot less likely to fire you and go list it with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're committed. There's a tie. There's a financial tie.
Mm-hmm.
And I found, too, that when people pay you money at the front end and accept your proposition and your model, it is amazing the degree to which they will take ownership of
exactly.
And responsibility for, you guessed it, the price.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's no longer a matter of...
It's not your problem. This isn't. They didn't dump their problem on you. It's
exactly.
Our problem.
Uh-huh. Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to working with a buyer, I also get a retainer,
mm-hmm.
and they sign a buyer brokerage agreement. So they don't run away either.
Mm-hmm.
This is a list of things now why it's good for my business,
mm-hmm.
good for the agent. By getting retainer money up front, it smooths out your cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of waiting 4 months for a great big kill,
mm-hmm.
You don't have big kills anymore,
mm-hmm.
but your money comes in a little more evenly, shall we say. When you're working as a consultant, your advice tends to be more credible than
mm-hmm.
a salesperson's advice.
Mm-hmm.
I think of two electronic stores here. One you have in the U.S., Staples.
Mm-hmm.
I go in there and I want something to do with my computer or keyboard or mouse or something. There's all kinds of people in red shirts ready to give me advice and help, and I know they're paid on salary.
Mm-hmm.
I can go across the street to a place called Future Shop. They're all on commission, and I feel altogether different in there because I know they're out to sell me something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think our advice is more palatable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to tag something on, but let Ron finish his thought. But sorry about that.
Did you want to add that now, Molly?
Well, just I want to go back before we forget. Many people in the Acre community know I changed fields a year ago. Suffice it to say that I've gone to a field that is billable hours. And it's very interesting that in calculating what you charge per hour, it's really based on how many billable hours. And it brings you to the point of saying, if I'm replacing my 40-hour work job, let's say in corporate, now I'm self-employed, billable hours becomes very important.
Sure does.
Because if you are idle, you are not so in other words, to make the same amount of money that you would have made in the job that you just left, you have to figure out how many billable hours am I going to have in what you're going to charge in order to make that amount of money. And it's just coming from the commission world of real estate, it was a real eye-opener for me. Of course, not as much of an eye-opener as it does for the typical realtor, given that I started the Acre program. But I just wanted to throw in and talk about the advantages to the practitioner is that big commission check, when you divide it out by the number of hours you actually had to work, it becomes a much smaller amount that you're earning,
mm-hmm.
and it puts it in perspective. So I just
That's true.
Again, want to throw that in.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm sure you're going to get to this, Ron, but to me, one of the biggest benefits of consulting is the differentiation between you and the 90,000 other people with real estate licenses in your area.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my raison d'etre.
So
the little things add up, too. You know, there's in the buyer context, you don't have to worry about driving down a street that has three FSBOs on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they're under contract, they've agreed to pay you. You don't care what they buy.
Mm-hmm.
Buyers are a lot less likely to waste your time, too.
Yeah.
You know, before we used to complain about being a limousine service.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll say to them, you know, if you want to save a bit of money, why don't you go and drive by these houses before we make appointments to show them to you?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, yeah, he's really working with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not trying to gouge me. So,
yeah.
But you know, I just a few of you may know I am getting my broker's license here in Florida and am lightly considering opening up a little consulting practice of my own. I don't really want to go out and be a traditional real estate agent. It's just I'm so excited by the possibilities of a quote unquote consulting practice and the differentiation that I mean, that's exciting to me, is I'm doing something nobody else in town does. I'm offering services nobody else can offer, and I'm even thinking, you know, I can offer these services to other real estate agents in town. You know, I mean, it opens up a world of conversation mm-hmm. when you tell people what you do. You know, people ask, real estate agents ask me all the time, well, you know, how can I market myself as unique? And I say, well, what's unique about you? Well, you know, I don't know. You know,
good question.
Well, make something unique about yourself, and this is something that would offer. So, you know, something kind of obvious is when you're offering additional services or just offering a different service packages, and this is a topic we're not going to dive into today, but when you're not tied to traditional listing and traditional buyers, you can offer other services. That's additional streams of income, additional sources of income, and that's something we teach about in the Acre program is, you know, you can create a service package for sale by owner. You can create a service package for a buyer in a resort community who wants to spend half a day driving around looking at houses, probably won't buy. You know, you could create a package, you know, that they pay you a couple $100 for that or whatever. You know, there's all kinds of service packages you can come up with if you have this flexibility to do so. You know, I mean, additional money, additional contacts, additional reasons to talk to people, additional confidence because you have something unique to offer that you don't just need buyers and sellers in a very skittish market.
And you don't necessarily have to be buying or selling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a whole slew of homeowner services. But also just in context with the buyer, if you are if you are like a typical buyer, that's especially a first-time buyer, where you just want to get a feel for the market,
mm-hmm.
most real estate agents they call don't want to be bothered. I mean, it's like, you're not ready to buy? I'll see you in 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
What they really wanted was that, you know, hour or two to learn the market from mm-hmm. the knee of somebody who does it. They want to learn, can I pay you for 2 hours, not just to drive around, but to drive around with your expertise to say, this neighborhood is accelerating at blah, 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 blah. That, when you talk to a first-time buyer,
mm-hmm.
that is huge, especially if you can then say, you know what, and just so you feel like you're not throwing money down a rabbit hole, you know, we will credit you that
right.
when you're ready to actually buy, however you pay.
See, I pay that all day long. And I have been in that position in this last year of wanting someone to spend half a day with me, give me expert advice without pushing me, and I would pay for that. I'd be delighted to pay for that.
Yes.
As long as they are the expert. Now, you know, and that's a different topic, but, you know, I had an email this morning from someone saying, I want to market, you know, luxury properties. How do I get into that market? And I was like, well, you know, do you know a lot about luxury properties? Well, no. Well, that's the first step is, you know, go become an expert in what you want to niche, you know, and then it's easy. It's easy.
Yeah.
But
there are also people who want advice around, should I renovate my property and mm-hmm. stay here, or should I sell it and buy another property?
Mm-hmm.
That's
well, and here again, okay, I can hear the audience saying, yeah, but everyone does that for free. Why would someone pay me to do that? Fair enough.
They're not.
I mean, again, you've got this conflict of interest. Will someone come out and give you objective advice on whether to sell or renovate? They might, but they might not because, you know, they've got a potential commission check riding on this or a potential
listing. Well, that's the key to it. You know, if the only tool you have is a hammer,
mm-hmm.
then everybody looks like a nail. How can you expect someone to advise you reliably if there's a potential sale opportunity here?
And I'm sorry, but if you are truly doing a move versus improve and you have one way you get paid and the other way you don't, again, it goes back to this ethics or eating. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Ethics will
yeah.
take a second place to eating. Or the perception is there in any event, which
mm-hmm.
is just, you know, just about as bad. And, you know, one thing I teach my, you know, the Sell With Soul crowd is, you know, you are on the same team with your seller. Why are we always so adversarial, especially with sellers? I think, I don't know if I said that. Anyway, if you approach this as a we and an us and, you know, we're in this and we're going to do this, as opposed to I'm on this side of the table, I want the lowest price and the highest commission, and
mm-hmm.
you're on that side of the table and you want, you know, and you're adversarial, creating this, you know, more of a partnership without this conflict of interest elephant between you, it really makes for a smoother relationship, I believe. Now, this is a question that I thought of. Tony's asking, if you're charging buyers by the hour, how do you stop the buyers from calling the listing agent to show them the property and then calling you when they find the one they want to buy?
It's interesting that that would be your first question, because
mm-hmm.
I had that question this morning, or yesterday afternoon, an email from someone that I have under contract. And she raised the question in all honesty. She wasn't trying to be deceitful of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But she had started out, when she saw a property she liked, she'd call the listing agent and get them to show it to her. Finally, I don't know if someone questioned it or what, but she emailed me yesterday and said, is it all right to do this? The way I dealt with it was to explain to her that every time she calls the listing agent, she's dialing the wrong number because
mm-hmm.
she's calling someone whose interests are opposite of hers
mm-hmm.
and who would want nothing more than to sell her that property.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're calling someone who sees you as a potential sale target. And in addition to that, it's kind of approaching dealing in bad faith.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, if you're talking to a listing agent, you might just let them know that you're under a buyer's contract with me, and they will suggest to you that I should show you the property.
Mm-hmm.
And, she said, I didn't know that. That's great. So now she's pointed in the right direction. But the,
you know,
the
and,
answer
and, you know, you think about it, would, you know, to, in order to not get the sales pitch from a listing agent and the runaround every time, it,
yeah.
just for that, it'd be worth it not to.
Well, that's,
pay a few
that's,
dollars.
Yeah, that's one thing.
I remember so many years of being in real estate where we would just cringe when we hear of our you know, calling somebody that we had under contract going in calling the listing agent. Well, in all fairness, they didn't know that they had done a faux pas. They really don't know.
Mm-mm. And this woman didn't know. But here's the thing for the person who asked the question. I think his question specifically was, how do you keep them from calling the listing agent?
Mm-hmm.
The way you keep them from calling the listing agent is you have them under a buyer brokerage agreement, which includes a retainer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it, even if they did call the listing agent, it can't hurt you because you've got some of their money.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Partly why
we're
doing it.
Well, I think what his concern was irritating the listing agent community having them be irritated with him.
Yeah.
And I think that's a valid concern.
It is. And the answer to that is that you need to educate the client better, and which in this case, I guess, I hadn't done.
Okay. Because I don't think people really want to irritate other people. They just had
no.
In general, you know, if you said, you know, the listing agents are going to expect you to be going through me, and you'll probably hear that message, either that or a sales pitch. And,
Indeed.
I wouldn't want to do that.
No.
Okay. We really have some great questions here. Charles is asking, and I was thinking this too, is there a price point where the consultant model doesn't give an advantage to the seller? You know, sort of a, there, is there a, I don't get up in the morning for less than this amount, which on, say, a $50,000 property,
yes,
isn't. How do you handle that?
I don't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
The average price in our market is slightly under $300,000. Most of the properties I deal with are over $300,000. It's 20 years since someone ever asked me to sell a mobile home for $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I just would have to say to them, look, the consulting model is going to cost you more than commission would cost you.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you value it at a great premium, it might be a better way to do it.
That's what I did. I had a firm once that had a lower than typical commission is how I called it. You know, when somebody said, we have a $100,000 condo we'd like you to list, you know, we would say, here is our minimum charge. And
yes.
I don't know what it was, $2,500 or, you know, I don't know what it was at the time, but, and that was what we said. I said, you can get a better deal somewhere else. We
yes.
will, you know, and it was just it was for us a decision, do we want this business?
Right.
Now,
and another way out of that,
the potential there for, you know, I mean, it would be a decision that you make at the time. Do you want
yes.
this business? And
if it's something you don't want, sometimes you can refer it to someone else in your office.
Mm-hmm.
And if something good comes of it and you get a 25% referral, that's some pocket money.
But you have to ask yourself if a job, irrespective of the kindness to help out somebody who's trying to, you know, buy a $50,000 property, but you have to ask yourself if commission is a better deal for them, then how little are you making an hour?
Yes.
And do you want that business? Is that, you know, and again, that's a pragmatic question.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there has to be business that isn't good for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's not, you know, there's nothing wrong with working the lower end market if that's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fortunately, in most areas, I would think that the cost of real estate is comparable to the cost of living. So, you know, if all of the properties in your area are $50,000 to $100,000, then I'm guessing your house, you know, and your cost of living is in that range as well. So, you know, are you charging $100 an hour or whatever a magic number is? No, you're not. But you don't need to, you know. So that's a concern we get a lot as well. I live in a lower, you know, a low cost of living area, low income area.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to pay consulting fees. Well, sure they will. They just have to be, they have to make sense in that economy, in that local economy.
Yeah. Probably the lawyers and the accountants in that town charge less, too.
Exactly. Let's see. We're having a lot of questions about how does the broker factor into this if you're charging fee for service, and how does your broker, the managing broker, get their pay?
Yeah. Well, I didn't. I'll answer that, but I don't really have a prepared answer because this seminar was to be more about the whys than the hows.
Right, right.
That's the how question. However, I have the good fortune of working for a brokerage that is atypical of the industry. I get 100% of the revenue I generate, and in turn, I pay an office rent and a contribution toward operating the office services and the cost of brokerage.
Okay.
So that is different from a brokerage that operates on a commission split and sees this as a bad thing. And
it's the RE/MAX model, basically.
And that was when I did this model. I was at RE/MAX, and, yeah, it worked. But you can do it under a split model, and we're not going to get into that today, but it can work in a split model.
Yeah. And that go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the question might be more esoteric in terms of what's in it for me as far as the broker is concerned.
Yes.
And again, it does take some education of your broker, but to help them to understand that number one, this is where they're going, the consumer's going. And number two, that by allowing you to do consulting jobs, you are planting seeds for a lot more future business than if you seed all of those smaller entry-level type jobs, and I say entry-level by, you know, doing a market analysis for a fee, providing that first-time buyer with a two-hour introduction to Real Estate 101 in your community, that you are planting a seed that will simply generate so much more business down the line.
That's
true, too.
The question also touches just ever so slightly on a remark that came up earlier, and that is that consumers get it much quicker than realtors get it. And realtors, when they get it quicker than brokers get it. Brokers sometimes feel threatened until they think about it, but they surely must be interested in some alternative to a commission system that is eroding.
I believe if I were a broker, I can see having a resistance to it for several reasons. I mean, one is the paperwork of it. I've got to now change my policy manual. I mean, it's a pain in the butt for the broker to do, and if he's up to his elbows in crises, it's not something he's going to be interested in. So I get that. I really do. And I don't begrudge most of the managing brokers out there that say, you know, it's great. No, we're not going to do it. Talk to me next year. If you have a listing under a consulting model, are you willing to double-end it? Are you willing to are you willing to have the buyer and the seller? And if so, how do you manage that?
I'm so glad that came up. And again, it's a how-to, but I'm perfectly happy to deal with it. In my model, the fee I charge the seller is for the fee that you would call my end. And I explain to them that in about 85% of cases, according to my research, the buyer is going to come with a cooperating agent. And that cooperating agent is going to expect 50% of whatever the going commission rate is. And in our market, that means 2.5%. So I say you need to be prepared to pay that. Now, in traditional real estate, if the buyer comes directly to me through my website or lawn sign or something, the traditional way is that you still pay the full commission and I get it all and I love it. This is very lucrative. But in my model, there's a benefit to you, Mr. Consumer, and that is I don't believe that's fair or reasonable. Here's what is fair and reasonable. If you've agreed to pay me a certain fee to do the listing side stuff and a buyer comes and they are unrepresented, I call it the casual buyer mode or the unrepresented buyer scenario. They'll call, they'll ask me about the house, express some interest, and I will, in that conversation, ask them if they have a realtor. And if they don't, I explain to them that I would be very happy to show them the house, and if they want to buy it, I can facilitate all the paperwork and everything. But you must understand I cannot be your agent because I work for the Wassermans, the people who own the house. So I do owe you honesty, and I owe you fairness, but I cannot suggest a price lower than or different from the asking price, for example. And I've had many of them say, no, that's okay. I really don't care. I don't have an agent. If I want to buy it, I'm happy to buy it through you, and they do. In which case, I charge my seller an additional fee to compensate me for the work I have to do to handhold that buyer. But without agency. And on a fee of maybe, say, $6,000 or $7,000, I might charge them a casual buyer fee of, you know, 2,800, 3,200, something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a, again, it makes my model look very attractive relative to the traditional commission model.
Mm-hmm. And it makes sense. And it's
and it makes sense.
Right.
Above all else, it makes sense.
The show here today is not a how-to. The beauty, I believe, of changing your mindset from a traditional contingent commission salesperson that follows the rules of, you know, this is how it's done, to I'm going to create a practice. I'm going to create a consulting practice, is you can figure all this stuff out. Ron just answered that question as to how he does it. Is that how I would do it? Actually, no, it's not. Jennifer Allen Hagedorn, real estate consultant, would handle that a different way. Is that fine? Absolutely, that's fine. A lot of the things Ron has said today, I'd be like, that's not exactly how I would do it. I would do it this way. I mean, that's the beauty I always thought of going into business for yourself, being self-employed. And for some of the people on here who have commented, my broker will never let me do this, that may be true. Your broker may never let you do this. I'll tell you what, I'd go either get my broker's license or go someplace where your broker will let you do it, and I think your career will blossom.
Yes.
And you'll have fun with it, and you'll have pride in what you're doing, and you'll be able to create a business model that makes sense. The whys will make sense to you, and when the whys make sense, everything else falls into place. It all becomes very obvious as to how we're going to make this happen, and a fun challenge to overcome instead of Ron said he does it this way, and so I've got to do, but that's not going to work. You know, no, here's what I want to do. I'm going to make that happen. And put yourself in a position, whether that's at a brokerage firm or on a certain, you know, split or non-split or desk fee or whatever, but put yourself in the position to run your business in a professional, intelligent, profitable manner. And, when I get my Florida broker's license, I'm not going to go run out to the corporate offices and say, hey, hire me. I'm going to make my business. And it's going to be my business. And that's very exciting to me. So not to say that you can't do some of these things at the big franchises. Some of them may be open to it. I don't know. But if you're running into a wall and you don't think it's going to be allowed, quote unquote allowed, then, you know, you can go somewhere else. You know,
it's
a
free country, you know.
It's a free country. And, you know, mm-hmm. business cards are cheap. You can go get yourself some different business cards if that's what you want to do. So, anyway, I said I would talk a little bit about the ACRE program. I'm not going to because we went long on time here. I know I didn't get to all of your questions, and there's some awesome questions here. I'm going to grab them all and figure out what to do with them so that we can get them answered. So, Molly, Ron, anything you'd like to add before we sign off?
Just one parting thing, and it's a quote from Molly Wasserman. Something to think about, and I love Molly for this quote. Would you rather be consulted with or sold to? Thanks, everybody. It's been great fun doing this.
Thanks, Molly, for coming. And, Ron, awesome.
No problem. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.